the threat of a German invasion. And 15 Leopard tanks from Germany aren't going to make any difference. The cluster bombs aren't going to make any difference in the military outcome of the war. But I do think that it's not a good thing to be spreading cluster bombs around. There's a reason to be against it. But I think what Biden is doing is he's saying, look how tough I am. I'm giving them these very deadly, scary weapons. Meanwhile, to my relief, he said, let's go much slower on letting Ukraine into NATO. Absolutely, we will not speed their way into NATO, which in my opinion is a good thing, because that's the red line. Russia will never make a peace agreement if Ukraine looks like it's going to enter NATO or does enter NATO. They'll never accept it. The only way to broker a deal is if we either say it explicitly or we say it secretly, like we did with in the Cuban Missile Crisis, where Kennedy made the deal with Khrushchev to remove the American the nuclear missiles from Turkey in exchange for Khrushchev pulling the missiles out of Cuba, which was kept secret for years. And I keep hoping there's going to be a similar resolution to this, that if they want to do it in secret, it's okay with me. Better if it's done publicly. But they have to make assurances to the Russians that Ukraine will not become a member of NATO.
Yeah, well, there's been opposition, political opposition in Europe to the decision of the U.S. to deploy these munitions.
Yeah, it split the alliance to some degree. But again, militarily, like the German tanks, it's insignificant. But well, the real serious escalation would be if the United States sent fighter bombers, and they haven't done it yet. So he's waiting for I don't know what. But again, I consider it a good sign that Biden has shown some restraint. You know, what's the end game? And the answer there is, the United States, as a nation, as a liberal nation with a sense of itself, cannot tolerate Russia as it exists. They find it intolerable. And there are people in the State Department who will not be satisfied unless Putin is overthrown. So if that's our objective, is regime change or political change in Russia, well, the Russians say to themselves, all bets are off. This is a battle of survival. It's existential. And whether it's true or not, they believe it.
I'd like to now move to another topic. I'd like to talk about Julian Assange. The issue of Julian Assange has been active in Europe for more than 10 years, and there seems to be a media blackout, even a discussion blackout, about Julian Assange in the U.S. Rick, can you tell me why this is the case?
Well, this is an interesting question because Harper's has published a couple of pieces over the last 3-4 years in defense of Assange. The first one by James Goodale, who was the lawyer for the New York Times in the Pentagon Papers case. And Goodale is the hero of the Pentagon Papers because he's the one who talked the Sulzbergers and the New York Times, the owners of the New York Times, into fighting the case and taking a more aggressive stance. And Goodale essentially says that what Assange did is absolutely no different than what the New York Times did. I mean, the New York Times received, quote, stolen documents, unquote, and published them. Assange received stolen documents and published them with the collaboration of a lot of newspapers, which were happy to take some of his best scoops. There's actually a wonderful quote in the Harper's Ukraine piece from Burns, the CIA, now the CIA director, talking about, oh boy, here we go again, provoking the Russians on NATO expansion. They're going to be mad. You know, they're going to be angry. This comes directly from WikiLeaks. So we owe a lot to Julian Assange. We owe a lot to Daniel Ellsberg and the New York Times of the day. Today, the news media has turned very establishment, very national security oriented, very sympathetic to the aims of the Trump, or well, the Biden administration. This started when Trump was was in the White House, where suddenly the liberal media had all these ex-CIA Pentagon officials on, Michael Hayden particularly, denouncing Trump's foreign policy as dangerous and so on and so forth. And Assange and his leaks were seen as part and parcel of a threat to the American security state, to the national security state. So the liberal media is not so sympathetic anymore to the notion of a citizen's right to know what the government is doing in secret on their behalf, the way they were during Vietnam. And Assange has been abandoned largely by the American media, including the New York Times. They do run editorials, kind of bland editorials, saying this is maybe not a great thing and so on and so forth. But there hasn't been a real full-throated counterattack from the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, in defense of freedom of the press. And Goodale has made this argument again and again and again. We just made it again a few months ago in a piece by Andrew Coburn, quoting Goodale, that this, what he did is no different from what the New York Times did in the Pentagon Papers. So why aren't we screaming bloody murder in the press? And there's something not respectable about it. I just give you a quick example. When we published our piece in April about this, about the silence surrounding Assange, I tried to get the Committee to Protect Journalists, which I used to be on their board, and I used to go on missions for them and so on, to explain why they don't list Assange as an imprisoned journalist. In effect, an imprisoned journalist. They will not respond. No one would return my phone calls. We couldn't get a letter to the editor, nothing. Just dead silence. They will not discuss it.
Well, what does this mean then? What does it mean for journalism in the U.S. or the citizens being informed and responsible about what's being done in their name?
It means that we're very poorly protected by the media now. I mean, there's been this collapse of regional newspapers, about the Los Angeles Times, Boston Globe, Philadelphia Inquirer. They're still there, but they're shells of their former themselves. There's no more Knight Ridder newspaper chain. There's no more real counterweight to the government. And I mean, it's worse in smaller states where there's not a single reporter covering the state capitol. That's how bad it is, because of Google and Facebook's depredations. So unless you can come up with some kind of new form of media that can get financial support and listener or reader support as an alternative to what we used to have, you're just not going to have an opposition media anymore. It's finished.
And are there any non-governmental organizations working on behalf of Assange in the U.S.?
Well, yeah, there's rallies from time to time, and people will sign letters and so on and so forth. But it's really sectarian left for the most part. You don't have the broad support of freedom of the press that we should have from left to liberal to right. Same goes, by the way, for Salman Rushdie. There was a dreadful silence after the attack on Salman Rushdie. The American liberals and some of the American left have gone to sleep on that because of political correctness, wokeism. They don't want to pick on the Muslims, a billion strong, but they don't want to pick on a minority religion. There's been a crazy, crazy collapse in American faith in freedom of expression. And I can't explain it other than financially. There isn't enough money, and there isn't kind of a nexus anymore of media and civilian support for freedom of expression.
What does that say about the U.S. and its future as a functional nation state?
Well, I made the argument 20 years ago when they did Davos in New York after 9/11. I tried to ask Richard Haass, major foreign policy figure in the United States, whether by his definition, couldn't we say the United States was a failed state? I shouldn't push this idea too far, but we're not a functional democracy anymore. I mean, even though Trump was defeated, I mean, which is a good thing. I mean, the election was upheld. There are bad, bad cracks in the system. And in both parties, there is strong, strong hierarchical authority that is trying to suppress democracy within the parties. I mean, the fact that we have no potential opposition to Biden, there's no candidate who is willing to stick their head out, and no serious candidate, is very distressing. I mean, there's a lot of things you could run on in opposition to Biden. And the horrible irony is that it's going to be left to Trump, who looks like he's going to get the nomination again, to argue against Ukraine, for example. Well, you could certainly say things on the internet that you couldn't say before there was an internet, but I still think that screaming on the internet is a lot like opening the window and of your apartment and screaming out the window. I mean, it just doesn't have much impact.
Are people getting informed? What happens to a citizenry who's no longer properly informed? What does that say about the future of that country?
Well, it's not a pretty picture. I mean, the debate here, like I said, it's a non-debate. It's filled with hostility and very little information, you know. And it's left to Twitter, which is not a great way to lead the discussion. So, and people who are good at social media know how to manipulate it. I guess they get heard above the people who are not so good at it or not so interested in it. So we're not in a great situation. No. I mean, the citizenry is not informed. And to go back to Julian Assange, people like Assange are not encouraged to do, there aren't people with the guts to do what he did because they see what happened to him and to Snowden. I think if you're a would-be leaker or would-be receiver of leaks, that would upset the government, You look at what happened to Assange, you look at what happened to Edward Snowden, and you say, I think maybe I'll live to fight another day.
Rick, you've been the publisher of Harper's Magazine for some 40 years, becoming the president and publisher of Harper's Magazine in 1983. Why is the magazine important?
Well, it's important because we publish pieces like the Ukraine piece when no one else is doing it. But we have a historical role not only as a political magazine, but as a literary magazine. You know, I still want to believe that literature matters, and that getting people to think and to write about subjects that are of greater importance than the day-to-day humdrum of American life is an important thing to do. But increasingly, literature is as a form is disappearing. People are less and less interested in literature, more and more interested in screenplays, TV shows, and so on and so forth, which I don't consider to be literature. And magazines like Harper's are forced more and more to get into the public opinion, political opinion realm, and to some extent the reporting realm. But if we don't do what we do, I don't know who's going to do it instead. One of the problems I had with publishing this piece was simply tactical. Who are we going to find to help promote the piece? Problem is, most of the critique of the Ukraine policy is coming from the crazy right, from Marjorie Taylor Greene. So I don't want Harper's to be allied with Marjorie Taylor Greene, obviously. But I would let my reporters go on Fox News. It's a very difficult balancing act, but Fox News is not my idea of a great television network. But at this point, the only place you can get a point of view like the Harper's point of view out there on broader media is through Fox News. Someone asked me that the other day, or on a show in Quebec, what does Harper stand for? And the first thing that came to mind was anti-imperialism. And Twain was a great anti-imperialist. So I do think that the Harper's piece on Ukraine is in that vein. We're not trying to colonize Russia, but we are trying to tell Russia what to do. So we were trying to force them to become something they didn't want to become. And this is a powerful strain in the American character. I mean, it goes back to the Massachusetts Bay Colony. And there's a competing sentiment, a competing line of thinking going back to George Washington and to John Quincy Adams, that we're not going to seek monsters abroad and so on and so forth. We should maybe set an example, but not try to dictate politics and culture to foreign countries. So that is part of our tradition, absolutely. And we're for liberty. We're for freedom of speech. Lewis Lapham always put it very well, and I try to say this whenever anyone asks me, we're more interested in using the First Amendment than in just defending it.
Peter.
Yeah, Mighty Mo Rogers taking us out of that interview with Rick MacArthur, the publisher of Harper's Magazine, and the article that was on the front cover in the June 2023 edition of Harper's, Why Are We in Ukraine on the Dangers of American Hubris, was written by Benjamin Schwartz and Christopher Lane. And the music you heard during the interview was provided by Matt Callahan and Yvonne Moore from their brand new album that's out called It Is Your Right to Rebel. Matt and Yvonne live in Bern, Switzerland. We're coming up to hour number two here on the Blues Zeppelin. 89.7 WRFI Odessa, 88.1 in Ithaca, 91.9 WINO Watkins Glen, and CJRO Carlsbad Springs, Ottawa. Welcome to hour number two of the Blues Zeppelin.